Harihi Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, 39. The nine different processes enunciated by Prahlad Maharaj, who learned from Narad Muni, may not all be required for the execution of devotional service. If a devotee performs only one of these nine without deviation, he can attain the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes it is found that when one performs one of the processes, other processes are mixed with it. This is not improper for a devotee. When a devotee executes any one of the nine processes, navalakshana, this is sufficient. The other eight processes are included. And so he pointing out is that not when it says they're not all necessary, doesn't mean that they're not required. The point is, what he's bringing out is that each one is so complete in itself that just by performing the one, it already includes the others, right? So it shouldn't be, oh, we don't need to do that. It shouldn't give that result. The idea is that means the other elements are already there. Like in deity worship, to worship the deity, you have to hear Bhagavatam, you have to associate with devotees, you have to chant, you know, you have to worship Tulsi, you have to do all these things that are already required, right? And so it means when you're hearing chanting, it's also in the association of devotees. So that means you're going to be hearing other things also. You're going to be hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And so they're automatically going to be included. If you're taking care of the temple, you're going to associate, padasevana, cleaning the temple, you're going to associate with devotees. You're going to see the temple program. You know, it's part of serving the deities. Does that make sense? So they'll always... So the point is this, whatever one or combination works, it's fine. It's not that, oh, it has to be just strictly this and then it's all. No, it's any one of them will work, or any combination. That's why Ambarish Maharaj, he's given as the example of someone who performs all of them. Right? Like that. And so now, yes. And so is that clear? So we shouldn't take it that it's by rules that has to be exactly like this or it won't work, and oh, you're doing some of that so this won't work. Mm-hmm. No. These nine processes are the natural mediums of activity of someone who is serving the Supreme Lord, right? Someone who's expressing devotion, then these nine activities are the natural forms, right? That's the idea. Other things are indirect. These are direct. Other things are indirect. Right, taking the family and connecting to Krishna, taking your money, connecting it to Krishna, taking your car and connecting it to Krishna. Right? These kind of things, these are indirect. Right? So those, if they're done in the mood of devotion with detachment to the result, then it becomes favorable, you know, because the devotional element is being cultivated and renunciation is being cultivated. So we're giving up our attachment to the material world that gets in the way of our developing the devotion. Right? So the indirect becomes valuable in that way, that it removes the attachments we have for the material world. But these are direct activities. So these are specifically meant for cultivating one's devotion to the Lord. But renunciation is automatically included. Right? If you're cooking for the deities, it means you're not cooking for yourself. You're serving the Vaishnavas, you're not serving yourself. right? But it's not like the other where you have to look at the renunciation, because, you know, one has a house not specifically for Krishna. For a devotee, then we'll say it's for Krishna. If we weren't a devotee, we'd say it's for our for ourselves. So now that we're a devotee, now we're connecting it to Krishna. But that we need a house is because of our conditioning, we require one. Does that make sense? So that element of being conscious of renunciation is there. That's why it's different from the direct activities, where chanting your japa, it's not so much you're thinking of the renunciation. Wow, I could be watching, you know, a movie now, but instead I have to chant my rounds, you know? You know, you understand, it's that's not the focus. The focus is on, you know, you chant, it's non-names, non-different from Krishna, you know, like this. You're looking at it from that aspect, you understand, from the cultivation of that devotion to Krishna, right? As we were saying, that the Upaya Bhakti has these two angas. So the direct ones cultivate that natural devotion. The indirect, it's mainly the renunciation, though automatically it's powered by the cultivation of that affection for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Right? We have affection for material energy, and so that's getting in the way. Right? So what is that affection? When we have affection for the material energy, what is it in actuality? We look at it philosophically. It's lust, it's illusion, but what is it? But that's what we're calling it. It's a perversion of our affection for Krishna, because our love should be applied to Krishna. When we apply it to something of this world instead, then it takes on all these negative qualities. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the guy likes to, you know, he's a sportsman, so he's applied his love for Krishna to sports, so then he's an enthusiast, you know, or he applies it to women, he'll be, you know, a lech, or he's a playboy, or it's the same thing. Right? So the idea is, the renunciation means your love has been misdirected because your identity is misdirected. If I'm the controller, of course, I'm the enjoyer. Right? So when you redirect it, then you take the exact same thing where you've misapplied your love and connect it to Krishna. So that's its natural state. But the medium that you're using is not a direct activity. Does that make sense? So that's why you have to go through that. You have to see it's not mine, it's Krishna's. Well, the name, you don't say, well, it's my name, it's not Krishna. You know, I don't have to worry about that. Like that. Maybe Poundrika would have to worry about it. For him, chanting japa would be a bit of, you know, that element of renunciation, you know. But, does that make sense? So that's what's happening. So these are the direct processes. These are the natural, you know, the ones for the natural, nature act of the soul, as opposed to redirecting. Does that make sense? So Prabhupada, now let us discuss these nine different processes. One, Shravanam. Hearing of the holy name of the Lord, Shravanam, is the beginning of devotional service. Although any one of the nine processes is sufficient, in chronological order, the hearing of the holy name of the Lord is the beginning. Indeed, it is essential. As enunciated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, Chaitanya Charitamrita Antyalila 20:12. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is cleansed of the material conception of life, which is due to the dirty modes of material nature. When the dirt is cleansed from the core of one's heart, one can realize the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha, Brahma Samhita 5:1. Thus, by hearing the holy name of the Lord, one comes to the platform understanding the personal form of the Lord. Right? So that's what one's trying to get to. Because even also through hearing and that, one is understanding the Brahman platform, Paramatma. You understand how everything is transcendental. All these things are also from hearing. But the point of this, devotional, means it comes to the point of Bhagavan. Right? Because otherwise, others are also hearing. And the same information, but only coming up to realizing everything is Brahman, right? Or that Paramatma is involved, right? But they don't get to the Bhagavan platform, which means you're actually rendering service. Does that make sense? Because you see, before appreciating that everything's Brahman, so being therefore being able to detach oneself from the material energy, that's its advantage, right? So seeing that, it is advantageous in renouncing. But it's not so much in the aspect of cultivating that devotion to the Lord. Does that make sense? Something one's attracted to in the material energy, you actually see the principle behind it. That principle is Krishna's quality. Right? So the point is then, therefore, since it's Krishna we're looking for, then why would we be looking in this way? Right? Then you have to apply it to the person. So therefore, I should be rendering service to Krishna. Instead, I should be looking for this quality in Krishna himself. You understand? So the natural stage, Vaishnava will take it from that platform that removes the material attachment to the direct service. Does that make sense? Right? While the impersonalist will leave it at the first stage. Right? The yogis may bring it up that he's controlling everything and all that. There's interaction. Right? So they're seeing the action element. So that's why technically the yoga, no, we'll say karma, jnana, and dhyana. Technically, jnana yoga is part of karma. Right? Because you're using the mind and the activities. At the end, it's just the mind. There's no activities. But the activity of the mind, you're meditating on the Lord instead of meditating on material energy. That's why we can say karma and jnana and not have to include yoga. Because yoga technically is part of the karma process. Yeah, it's a subtle, like that. But I mean, it's a little gross than tying yourself up like a pretzel or something like that. It's, you know. Does that make sense? So one's trying to bring to that. So by cleaning the heart, so it will automatically do the renunciation part. That comes automatically. If you're doing the indirect automatically comes. Right? Knowledge and vairag automatically come. So one focuses on that shravana. But when we have attachments within the world that don't go away by this process, right? Then we address them by looking at it, you know, through the philosophy and seeing how, you know, trying to connect that particular thing to Krishna, either through the activity, the result, the philosophical elements, like this. Does that make sense?
Prabhupada writes here about the chronological order.
Yes.
Those nine processes sometimes are put in like ascending order. Then one first is on the level of Shravanam, next is on the level of Kirtanam.
Means you have within itself naturally levels. But then it's like those first three will be put in ascending order and the last three will be putting in ascending order. But your middle four, there's no ascending order specifically there. It means that before any of the other ones can be done, if you don't hear, how are you going to chant or how are you going to remember? Or if you don't hear, why would you think serving Vaishnavas is important or offering prayers or serving the deity? Does that make sense? So therefore, you do have a chronology, but it's not that it goes through all nine like that. Does that make sense? There's chronology that this will come first. So it's the first three that are the prominent. When they're in place, then the others are added or not, it doesn't matter. But automatically, you know, Atmani Vedanam will come. Does that make sense? That's why it's saying the others are included. Because if you're always hearing and chanting about the Lord, then you're always offering prayers. You're always associating and serving Vaishnavas or anything connected to the Lord. So that's Padasevanam. You know what I'm saying? You're always doing something for the deity. If you're following the Pancharatric process, you're doing something for the deity. You know what I'm saying? So it's like if you think about it, one's in this class means there is the Bhagavad element about hearing and chanting about the Lord. So that's there, of course, that aspect. But there is also the aspect that's possibly that one would look at it that one is going to go to Bhagavatam class. So this is doing what that is doing. You know what I'm saying? So there'll be that Pancharatric perspective. You understand? So then it comes in, so it's still part of deity worship that one is here. You know, one gets up early in the morning, takes a bath. But that's the time to get up to chant also. But that's also one's, you understand? So they overlap. But hearing has to be first. Otherwise, you wouldn't even know the other parts exist. Is that okay? Yeah. Right. So, in other words, you take the application of chronology as much as it applies. Don't overly, you know, don't, in other words, don't force chronology on the whole system. If what, where it naturally applies, then that's where it's used. Does that make sense? You know.
To the previous paragraph, when one practices Palabhati, then can we classify his actions that, like his daily activities, will be part of Palasevanam or Atmanivedana? Or
you can, but generally, Palabhati, then you're talking about prema, right? Because that even in bhava, it's not counting as Palabhati. So there it's just he's acting within his constitutional nature, within his natural, within his rasa. So you don't count that now Mother Jashoda is, you know, cleaning the kitchen for Krishna, so that's Padasavana, and now she's cooking for Krishna, so that's Arjuna. You don't know. That's for us. Just like Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. You know, the Sandini, Sambit, Ladini. That is for us to be able to distinguish so that we can break apart the aspects. So when it breaks apart the material, we lose interest. But because it breaks apart and we're able to identify, then we become inspired in the spiritual. But on the transcendental platform, Krishna doesn't make any distinction. Because you can only have the activity in a place, and you're only going to do an activity if there's a goal. So they're non-different. Right? But because it's all connected to Krishna, it's all done in love, you don't have to distinguish. Here we do. Because the Samartha Brahman, the place is right, the activity is right, but the goal is wrong. Right? Because the goal is for himself. It may be even he's offering the results to Vishnu, but he's only doing that because that's part of the ritual so that he can go to the heavenly planet. So the goal is not to give the results to Vishnu, the goal is to go to the heavenly planets. Right? So then we can distinguish. Or, we're doing the service for Krishna, the results for Krishna, but we don't identify as a servant. So we think we're the Lord and Master. So everybody in the temple is, you know, very disturbed because, you know, we're the guy that knows everything's in charge of everything, he's got everything to say about everything. Because somehow we've identified, you know, our self-proclaimed, you know, authority. So that's wrong, you know. Or the person is, His attitude's right, his results, you know, for what he wants it for Krishna is right, but he's not going about the Abhideya properly. Right? And then we even make distinction between, you know, what rules are governing the Abhideya. You know, so Pancharatra governs the deity worship. You know, you're dealing socially, that's dealt with by Varnashram. You're dealing with a specific task or skill, that's dealt with by Niti. You understand? So it defines within Abhideya if you're doing everything properly so that you're actually getting a result. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so some people, very nice, but they get no results because they don't actually follow the principles to make it successful. So their endeavor means you are an instrument in the process of the material energy transforming into the result. That's why it's called the material cause, because she transforms. We don't make her transform. Right? So if you're not following the rules, proper rules that allow for the transformation, there won't be any transformation. You know what I'm saying? If I take the bottle out of the fridge, you know, like that, and put it on the counter, then how come it didn't open? Right? I put it on the counter, you know? Like that, you know, then I pick up a knife and whack the thing or get in here and try to get it. None of these are the right activity. So the material energy will not transform. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? At least for that, it means your knife transforms when you try to open the thing with it, you know, especially. But it's not working. So even though one may sincerely be trying to do it for Krishna, one doesn't have the knowledge of the field. You know, how it works. Does that make sense? So that's what Dharma defines, Pancharatra defines, Niti defines, Artha defines. What I'm saying? So that's what those shastras are defining. But its purpose, the philosophy and all that, means you took the lid off first, yeah? Okay. Yeah. See, it works. There's a practical example like that. Okay. Good. See. He immediately applies it in his personal
in your
life.
That's what you're all saying.
Is that okay? So there's no contradiction between all these shastras. We'll say, oh, well, that's Niti. No, but the point is, you know, Niti shows you how to just get something done. You know, what are the ethics? In other words, as we said, ethic means, Niti is ethics. So it's what is good and bad action? Good means it gets the work done. Bad means it doesn't get the work done. We're talking about getting the work done. We're not talking whether it's good to do that work or not. You understand? Just like this. Now let's say someone's a thief. Okay? Now, he has two options. He can go at a time when no one will see him to try to steal, or he can go at a time where he'll be seen. So, for stealing, what would be the proper ethical endeavor? Not to be seen, right? So, therefore, he'll be in work a good thief. Right now, whether thievery is actually good or not, that's what Dharma Shastra defines. You understand? But the Niti is just, you apply it to anything. You want to fix your car, you want to cook lunch, you want to make the bed, you know, you want to be able to, you know, figure out where the bed is, where the bathroom is. This is Niti. Right? But what you're supposed to be doing, that you got up at the, you know, you got up in the morning, right? You know, you took your bath, made yourself ready. Okay? So you did that. So the work was successful, right? But one person's doing that at 4 in the morning, and the other has, you know, slept through until, you know, 4 in the afternoon. Right? Because it was a really long party. They didn't actually get home until 6 in the morning. You understand? So by Niti, it's correct, but by Dharma, it's not. Right? And then by Artha, it also is not, you know, if his job was at 9 o'clock. Right? But if his job starts at 6 o'clock, then he's doing fine. Does that make sense? So, the different shastras is how it's applied. But ultimately, if it's not done to please Krishna, then none of these rules make any difference. Then it's just a matter of you're a nicer animal or not so nice animal. That's all. Yes? Okay, so what happens to a devotee who doesn't have much knowledge but is sincerely trying? Point is that if they're sincerely trying, and then they'll be consistent, it'll come, they'll find out, because devotional service gives knowledge and detachment. So it will come. You know, Krishna will put, like Brahma, he was sincere, therefore then Krishna revealed to him. Like that, you'll come in contact. But if coming in contact with that knowledge, if one thinks, oh, that's not necessary, I only need the sincerity, then that wouldn't be correct. But if one doesn't know in the beginning, one just tries. You know, there's no training and all that. It's just like before, there was no training in you know, social dealings or this or that. But devotees, 60s, 70s, they were meeting people on levels of government and celebrities and other things that devotees now, it's rare that they'll even do. Though they go to their seminar and how to do this. And, you know, I think somebody does the Carnegie's Win Friends and Influence People, and there's all kinds of, you know, success stuff going on. But no one's able to do it, but though they're technically they're supposed to train. Therefore, no training because the sincerity was there, so Krishna would help. Right? But if one comes across a better way to do it, one would take it and not just go on the sentiment. In other words, the sentiment is where it starts from, because that's you're trying to please Krishna. Right? And then if you're seeing that I'm doing this for Krishna, not for myself. As you get knowledge on how we're maybe not doing it fully for Krishna, that our self's involved, so therefore we adjust that. And that would be proper. Does that make sense? So this is just making it available so that it'll make it easier. Prabhupada wanted us to study because the books are available, so we should study them. That was the conclusion in 1980s. The devotees weren't reading the books. Therefore, when some devotees started preaching a deviation in the philosophy, except for Satsarup, no one understood it. They just, oh, okay, makes sense. You know, because it made sense to those devotees' material mind. And so when they spoke it, it spoke to the material thinking of the devotees that were there by their conditioning. Only Satsarup had read Nectar Devotion and said, no, this is not right. You know? And so that was, you know, does that make sense? So then Prabhupada said, well, so there has to be a regulated. So that's when the Bhagavatam class started, the Gita class. Before that, it was just Harinam. It was just preaching. That's all the devotees did. You know, they didn't get up early because they stayed up late. Then they chanted, they got up, they chanted their rounds, they took prasad, and they went out all day. Came back, took some more prasad, went out for the night. Right? You know, so that's what they did. And so then, you know, like that, things expanded, but then no one knew the philosophy. Because Prabhupada was expecting they would be reading, because they had plenty of free time. But they weren't. So then he had to regulate that there's a class that you hear. So, and we see it has effect. Because when we were studying the Gita, then the, you know, these the first chapter, second chapter devotees are, you know, fairly used to, right? And then 7th through 12th, where it was talking about Krishna and his qualities, and that devotees knew. But the chapters on Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, and then all the divine and demoniac, this was where there was more questions. Because it's technical, so you don't catch that. It comes up now and again. But the point, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, devotional service, pure devotional service, then it's all throughout the books. We're hearing it again and again because we're going to the classes. So those parts were very easy. Right? Does that make sense? So when we're talking pure devotional service, we don't have much problem. But when we apply it into the practicalness of the life, where we're dealing with mixed devotional service, that's where the questions come up. Does that make sense? So by studying, means one is then devotees are situated nicer, so they can tell the difference between Vaishnava and Mayavad philosophy. That's the point in 1970, they couldn't. Like that. So devotees can tell now that, you know, what's not devotional. But the fine points between direct and indirect, sir, direct they have no problem about. But indirect, that's where the problems come up. So devotees will think, well, I have to be practical in my life, and so I'm doing all these things, and so no one should complain, like that. But the problem's not if one's living in the temple or living outside, or one has a job or not, or has money or not. Or the problem is are the results for ultimately for Krishna, right? Is our identity seeing ourselves in relationship to Krishna? That's the point, and that's where devotees are making the mistake. Because now they know the basics, so they're not doing anything, they're not acting in a way that's directly against devotional service. They're very careful about that. And all devotees will understand the ultimate goal is love for Krishna. But how they situate themselves and how they deal with the situation they're in, sometimes that mechanically is not correct. But they can't distinguish. That comes from just lack of knowledge, lack of study. So that was then what having established means Prabhupada wanted devotees to develop these degrees by a systematic study. It means he'd already in the 70s mentioned it and was hoping the devotees would take it up, because he'd mentioned other things they'd do it. But somehow or other the study part was not high on the list, you know. That I know of in those earlier days, Satsarup Maharaj is the only one who actually instituted courses. There's devotees that have Bhakti Shastri degrees from the 70s and that he ran the courses. You know, he gave the study and then he would have the tests and all that. You know, the idea was is that everyone would study through the year and come to Mayapur and then take the tests like that. You know, that was the... But he was the only one, and he was the only one that read the Nectar Devotion to tell the difference. So it goes. In other words, he valued study like that. Because Prabhupada was saying by 75, when devotees had gotten their Bhaktivedanta, then they could become gurus. Right? But by 75, it's very, very, very rare that you could even find that there was a Bhakti Shastri study going on. You know? Let alone Bhaktivedanta. So I think to today there's no means devotees have studied through that, but as far as a organized study, there are no Bhaktivedantas. Right? You know. There are. Oh, in Vrindavan. Okay, so Vrindavan completed, right? But here hasn't. Okay. Okay. But that's, you know, great. It's good. A few years late, but it worked. Okay. Very good. Is that okay? Okay. Yeah.
And it's not easy to retaliate that kind of.
Yes. But we have to remember the person who said it's not. Right? So, means in saying that we only need Prabhupada's books and outside of that we don't need anything. But is it the books themselves or is it the teachings? Right? Is it that we have a library of Prabhupada's books and that's all we need? Or is it the teachings that it gives? Right? So, then two parts. One is looking at it from just the knowledge itself. Now, for different aspects of knowledge, Prabhupada points out books of the Acharyas to go to for that. Brahma Samhita for certain things, two books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You know, these different aspects. Priyad Bhagavatam Rita. He says anyone wants to know more about Vaishnavas. So in his books, he mentions these other books. Right? So those books then, that specifically he mentions Sandarbhas, like that. So these are valuable studies within the process. That would be one thing. Now, if we don't need anything other than Prabhupada's books, then the question only comes up generally when we talk about studying Shastra. But if it's talking about studying Karmi's books, generally no one ever brings that up. Sometimes, but generally no one ever brings that up. Living, doing activities and a lifestyle that Prabhupada didn't recommend, somehow or another this point doesn't apply to that. Because, you know, his books means how he taught, so that lifestyle, that pancharatric lifestyle, that's all that's valuable. Anything other than that is not valuable. You know? So that's not, wouldn't be important. Does that make sense? Let's say something like, ownership of a flat in the MVT. When Prabhupada was here, everything belonged to the temple, and you just lived there and took part in those facilities. And if that's not your lifestyle, why would you be in Vrindavan? You wanted to do this whole thing, you'd live somewhere else. You know, if you were visiting, you'd stay in the guest house. You know what I'm saying? So that's also, you know, and so is that regulated? Is there a temple command? Who's seeing that you're doing what you're doing? So they're taking it as their own private house, but applying that into the environment in Vrindavan. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Practical aspect, there's a practical aspect of looking at the Acharya's works when it comes to a detail. You know what I'm saying? But my point is it goes both ways. As soon as they say, we only stick to Prabhupada's books, great, then just stick to what Prabhupada's books talk about. Are you living that? And if you're not, Now, the problem comes if it's somebody who is living a lifestyle that's just according to books and all that, and you talk about something else, and they say, we only accept... There you have a problem. You know, because they are doing what they say. I'm talking about those who... You understand? There's a difference. In other words, those who would live simply according to what Prabhupada's talking about and only read Prabhupada's books, and they say we don't need anything else, then I wouldn't even bother discussing it with them because it works for them and it's fine and it's perfect and it will be perfect. But that there are other books that Prabhupada mentions if they're studied along with, you know, in pursuance of. You know, Rupa Goswami says you approach the present, the previous acharyas through the present acharya, it's done in that mood, then that's fine. But if one just has this interest to know, you know, coming from the jigyasu point of view, and therefore wants to study all this and that, that's not important. Because then what will happen is there'll be, one can't reconcile the seeming contradictions or differences between what the different acharyas say. Like that. I've seen it myself in one of our ISKCON published books. They're saying that Vishwanath says this, Baladev says that, and it's different. And then Prabhupada's is like a third thing. But if you look at it carefully, they're all saying exactly the same thing. In fact, what Prabhupada says brings them both together. Right? Because all it is one is saying the encouraging that I'm a neophyte, you know, you're talking to a neophyte, so therefore what you're doing is devotional services, keep the mood right, try to keep it pure, do it for Krishna, like this and that. So that's what Baladeva is saying. Vishwanath is saying, you know, what was said here is that pure devotion, I mean, devotional service starts at prema. Before that, it's actually sadhana. It's not actually devotional service. It's in pursuance of devotional service, right? Because the neophyte tends to become proud. So he thinks I'm a great devotee. But then if you bring in that aspect from Vishwanath, no, you're not. Devotee is prema. Then you have to be humble all the way through. And by the time you get to prema, then it's a eternal, permanent practice of being humble and seeing one's position. But before that, one may need to be reminded. Does that make sense? So it seems like two different approaches. They're not. They're the same thing. That's why Prabhupada will be so encouraging, and then someone will make a comment, and bang, he'll just... You know, devotees, we're talking about the smart, the Brahmins, and this and that. And then they come up in a conversation about some Brahmins, and some devotee made the comment, yeah, these Brahmins. And, you know, Prabhupada says, they are Brahmins. They are respectable. You know, and especially coming from our background, there's plenty we can learn from them as far as lifestyle and cleanliness and you know, regulation and that. But our complaint is that they think the rules are the end. And going to heavenly planets is your, you know, your ultimate goal. That's where they make the mistake. We're not saying that they're not Brahmins, but we'll take it. Oh, they're not even Brahmins. You know, that them and some guy off the street in New York are the same. They're all nonsense. No, they're Brahmins. And namo, you know, Brahmanya Devai, it means you have to respect them as Brahmins. Just like a Mayavadi sannyasi, he is a sannyasi. He's gone through the samskar, he's bona fide. He is. You have to respect him. But it doesn't mean you have to listen to them. You know, is that so? It's just a matter of distinguishing the lifestyle is proper, in line with the books, and they are sticking just to the books. That's fine, you know. And so for them, it works, you know. But they're not going. Generally, someone who's doing that's not going to make an issue out of that other books are being studied. It'll be their opinion. If you ask them, they'll tell you. And that's it. Those who will make issue of it, generally it's that they themselves is a problem with studying in general. So it's not even that they want to study Prabhupada's books. They just think practical work should be what we're doing. So they're on the platform of karma yoga. So the element of jnana yoga just doesn't make sense to them. So you distinguish between these two grades. So the one who's situated in Prabhupada's lifestyle in the books, you just offer your respects and they're nicely situated. They don't need anything more. It is all there. You know, but for detail, Prabhupada's, you know, given. So in studies, then it can go beyond. And if someone's coming from the platform of the karma, then depending upon who they are, you can either try to make them understand that the element of study is important and this and that, but if you can't, just you leave it. And if they're aggressive, then you cut them down, because there's always going to be something very weak in their lifestyle. And so you can just say, so this is what Prabhupada wanted? You know, no, but we're just being practical. Is this a, yeah, so the point is you're being practical for what? For money, and we're being practical for knowledge. So, you know, why is it money is better than knowledge? Everybody knows knowledge is, it has more respect than money. You know, like that. So knowledge is the top. So it's just, you know, so in other words, they should just not comment. Keep it to themselves. They don't like, don't go. But don't make it into an issue and, you know, crusade. And, is that okay? Yes.
This first Bhakti Shastra exam took half hour, and the questions were like, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead?
Yes. So would you rather this study be like that?
No, but...
The point is in comparison to everybody else then, that was a lot. You know, I mean, Achyutananda, you know, gave a class explaining all the details of the 10 offenses. And that was just something so far beyond the scope of anybody's knowledge. You know. But now it's like, you know, more general knowledge. You know, so things develop. It's not that, but those 10 questions is that knowledge should be there. If you've missed that and gotten into something else, then there's a problem. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's expected. It takes time, right? Much of there's also a difference. Most are taking it as a high school level, high school equivalency, but we're taking it as an undergraduate. Does that make sense? Like that. Because on the other system, you end up that the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the PhD level. For us, the Bhagavatam is the PhD level, and then that's beyond what technically you call higher doctorates. Like that. That the Bologna system doesn't really accept it, you know, because it's more of a factory kind of concept. But most indigenous, you know, local academies of the world always have some higher study. America doesn't, but most do. They call them higher doctorates. That they're a doctorate, but they're in another category. Does that make sense? So because the point is this stuff is so far beyond what the karmis have, you know, even our bachelor's level, you know, so then want to make sure they understand where it kind of like comes out. Does that make sense? So therefore, the professor of divinity and the acharya degrees, those are higher doctrines. Does that make sense? So we've just shifted the whole thing. But you see, to do the whole thing, it takes a few years. No, it's not a 6-month course. It means it's broken into 6-month courses. But you have to do all these 6-month courses to get the bachelor's. Does that make sense? Yes.
Is this higher doctor to be also called post-doctor?
Yeah, it depends on the place. Some call it post-doctor, higher doctor. Some places call it habilitation. You know, there's all these different names that are given like that. It just depends. But it's just as time goes, you'll see it less because as the Bologna system expands, it just basically makes it you have, bachelor, master, and doctor, and that's it. And then there's nothing really higher. In America, you get tenure, which just means you've been around longer than anybody else, and they can't kick you out. But it doesn't necessarily... It indicates by practical that you know more, but it doesn't mean by academically you've studied more. You know, while in other countries of the world, it means that you've studied more. like that. Does that make sense?
I see that I'm realizing myself in studying with you that knowledge is very important, but knowledge with devotion.
Yes.
Means, it's not just knowledge.
No.
It makes a big difference.
No, yeah. It means knowledge without the devotion is not. Because the point is, if it was just knowledge, we'd go through this stuff very quickly.
Yes.
Because then it's a matter of you've read it, we go through a few points, give you a test to see that you've caught the points, and it's done. Like that. But here it's that unless it's understood, then, you know, that's why sometimes we do, you know, one paragraph and sometimes we'll do two or three pages. It just depends on the. But otherwise, as far as your modern academic approach, this, what we're doing here, would be highly considered highly inefficient.
Yes.
But the point is that the soul's got to understand it, not just the intellect. Like that. That's the point. Is that okay? Thus, by hearing the holy name of the Lord, one comes to the platform understanding the personal form of the Lord. After realizing the Lord's form, one can realize the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And one can understand his transcendental qualities, one can understand the Lord's associates. In this way, a devotee advances further and further towards complete understanding of the Lord as he awakens in realization of the Lord's holy name, transcendental form and qualities, his paraphernalia and everything pertaining to him. Right? Therefore, the chronological process is Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. So, yeah, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.23. So, what we see here is that it's giving the levels within it, that one's remembering the Lord, but still there's levels within it. You're hearing the name, so that's hearing, but then you'll naturally, from the name comes the form, from the form qualities. And very interesting here is from qualities, it says, then one can understand the Lord's associates. Right? Normally the term is just said pastimes. Because pastimes means what? Right?
Activities.
Activities, yeah, with?
Associates.
The associates, right? So pastimes just means that. So if you understand that, just saying pastimes, it gets the job done. But here, he's bringing it out because it's a study of this. So it means understanding the Lord's associates. Because a lot of times, Krishna's pastime, we just think of Krishna. Right? And then there's kind of that flavor of, you know, from reading Krishna book, there's a flavor of Braj there. So it's Krishna and that flavor of Braj. But actually it means Krishna, Braj means the associates. Right? Because someone else will think Krishna and think of the flavor of Vaikuntha. Right? Or Dwarka. But it's the associates that make that realm. Because Krishna is himself, and depending upon who he's interacting with, then you get the different flavors. Does that make sense? So when we understand that, then it brings in how to deal with Vaishnavas, how to understand Vaishnavas, all that becomes very, very important. Otherwise it's just, you know, me and Krishna. Like that. Yes.
How to make the mind just to hear the holy name when we chant, and not to think of anything else. The process starts with hearing the holy name.
It's just practice. Means understand that we're listening, what we're associating with is Krishna. Does that make sense? So therefore, then the holy name would be important. If it's Krishna, and you hear, then you're associating with Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So thinking of anything else is not important. So if that's understood, one practices. That's why it's called sadhana. Right? In these higher stages, then it's not sadhana. You just like to hear. Right? Because then again, you know, we have to chant, we have to do, we have to, we're spacing out, bring it back, like that. So there's an effort. But as Vishwanath pointed out, at Ruchi, there is no more effort. It's just the taste is so nice that therefore one is inspired to chant. And then by regularly doing that, that turns into attachment. Before our chanting is turned into we take up, get faith, take up association, right? Take up the process, but it's not steady. Then it becomes steady. So then by practicing it in a steady way, then we get a taste. Then it becomes very, very quick. Otherwise, then it's going through all these stages of trying to remove what's in the way of our appreciating. Does that make sense? So in other words, just sticking at it, it makes it work. Okay.
If one is following the sadhana by association without understanding that I'm doing this under the direction of a spiritual master to reach a certain goal, is it bhajana kriya or is it more of a preliminary?
Okay, so if you're working, performing bhajana kriya without a spiritual master, without connection to a spiritual master, no, then it's still sadhu sangha. Because the point is in Shraddha, person is still doing some aspect of Bhajana Kriya, right? They're taking prasad, they're going to the kirtan or artik, or, you know, coming to the temple. They're doing something, they're doing aspects, but it's not full. Because full comes in association with devotees. And then associating with devotees, then one wants to do like they do, so one fills out the program. But Bhajana Kriya becomes serious when there is initiation, technically. You know, but it's not that one's not getting benefit. You know, in other words, that one is still advancing, right? Even if one doesn't have a spiritual master, you know, specific, or is not initiated, one is still advancing. So by the time one actually does, then one will be at more advanced stages very quickly. Or one takes something, it'll gradually get there. Does that make sense? So it's not that the advancement won't happen. It's just that why doesn't one have a guru? That's the question. You know, not in the beginning. But if it's like, well, I don't need, or, you know, I can't find anybody, or like that, it's like, why can't you? So many devotees are here.
And what about the situation where someone has a guru and is performing activities but with maybe an ulterior motive?
He has a guru, he's performing with ulterior motive, then whatever is the ulterior motive, that will distract him. So he has a guru, so the connection's good, but he's not utilizing it properly. So once utilizing it properly, then the connection's not complete. But there'll be benefit. But it's not that, well, one's better than the other. The point is be connected, do it correctly for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? It's not this game of, you know, would you rather be, you know, stuck in a, you know, barrel of sauerkraut for 2 hours, or, you know, these kind of things. You know, it just goes, it's like, it's not, devotional service doesn't work like that. The point is being connected. The guru is the strong part in the one, but he's not focusing properly on the process, or not following it for pleasing Krishna, that's the weakness. So take the what's strong, leave the weakness. And the other one, he's following very nicely, that's a strength. But if he doesn't have that connection, that's a weakness. So the point is you aspire for the strengths and try to give up the weak, avoid the weaknesses. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that the example as it is, it's complete, and so therefore it's complete in itself. No. What's complete is its, and anything is its connection to Krishna, and its weakness is it's not connected to Krishna. But we have to give examples, right, with something that we can relate to. And so that example will be within our, you know, how you say, our experience, right? But it doesn't mean that our experience is perfect. But unless it's within our experience, then how will we relate to it to actually try to use it? So that's why the example, you know, it has its purpose, but if we get too much into the example, the weakness will be found. Because that's not what we're talking about. You know, it's like the example Vishnu gave, he was trying to point out the moon. You know, and so from pointing out the moon, one says, you know, you see the field here, okay, and then there's, you know, that pile of grass, okay. Behind that, there's that kind of like, there's that green thing sticking up, that tree. Okay, you got that, you know, you got the tree. Then he says, out onto the left of it, there's a branch sticking out. Yeah, okay, there's a little white ball above that, that's the moon. So the point was is to know what the moon was. Now if they go and says, but is this the proper tree to have planted here in the ashram? That's not the discussion. it's a popular discussion, but it's not the discussion, right? We were having that for the in the first 3 weeks. We were getting to the examples, you know, like that, instead of the point the example is making. Okay, and then the chronology is that you're going to hear, and then from that, then you're going to remember in all these different stages. So that's the chronology that we're using. The same process of chronology, chronological understanding, holds true in chanting and remembering. It means you're going to chant about his name, his form, his quality, his that you're going to remember about his name, his form, his quality. When chanting of the holy name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia is heard from the mouth of a pure devotee, his hearing and chanting are very pleasing. Srila Sanatana Goswami has forbidden us to hear the chanting of an artificial devotee or non-devotee.
Artificial devotee?
Artificial. it's made out of... you take crude oil and then through processing, then you end up, you get the artificial devotee.
Sure. Yeah.
Artificial would mean the ones that they're not actually coming in a proper line. Okay. You know, the Jat Goswami, this and that. Not that they can't be bona fide.
No.
But it's just their lineage is not, you know. Or it can also mean artificial means a devotee, and everything's proper means their situation. It's not their improper line, but their purposes in devotional service are not real. Because it means doing something to please Krishna, that's natural, right? Doing something to not please Krishna for the soul, that's artificial, right? So in any way, anything that's not is off the path, meaning not meaning that it's a lack in their practice. It means it's a that lack is a focus.
So devotees with chilies up their noses.
Yes, like that. You know, or they're doing something because that will get money.
Yeah.
You know? And that money's for themselves. It's not that okay, they're doing something, it'll get money, and then the money's for building the temple. That's not the problem. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, the problem will be is they think, I am the big collector. That's the artificial part, because we're not. We're only the instrument in big collection, but it's not that they're not an instrument. They're an actual real instrument, and they're a good real instrument. But to identify, so we have to be able to discern what's real and what's not. Right? That's what Bhagavatam says, is that this literature is to discern reality from, you know, illusion. So reality is its connection to Krishna, illusion is what's not. So that you have a devotee, he's a big collector, but he's proud of it, and then to throw everything out, that would be wrong. No, because he is a big collector, it's a fact. He is collecting the money for the temple, that's a fact. Right? So that's good. So these are all good. That he has an attitude about it, that's a problem. Now, is it workable that the work he's doing is so valuable that everybody can tolerate, because being tolerant like a tree is also a devotional fact. So if we can do that, and he'll do this, and that, then by that process he'll get purified. So hopefully at the end he'll see, I'm just a humble servant, rather than get so big that now he thinks, you know, now I'm ready for the big time, and then go out and check with Exxon or something if they are looking for, you know, qualified personnel, you know. So Does that make sense? You know, but if it's like intolerable, no one can function and do their service, then you have to say something, but then you have the risk he may not do it. But, you know, then you could say, well, better it's done devotionally than not. You know, better we'll sit here and devotionally than have this big temple and then, you know, so you have to balance where is there greater, you know what I'm saying? Like, no one else can collect, he can, so therefore you have to put up with it. Like that. Does that make sense? So these kind of things, you have to see the balance. What's going to like that? So what's real is connected to Krishna. What's artificial is not. So generally, whatever we do is extreme, right? If we make a point, the exception that we find is always extreme. You know. You can connect anything to Krishna. So does that mean we can connect intoxication to Krishna? You know, it's like that. It's always got to be extreme. No, we're talking about, you know, stuff like your toothbrush, you know, and that you use that particular cosmetic, or that you made considerations about which one of your millions of shoes you're going to put on, You know, because it wasn't necessarily for Krishna that you put those ones on. It matched your, you know, your pants or your belt, and because you wanted to go to this place and impress in this way. So, and then ultimately, eventually, way down the line, it gets to Krishna. That's what we're talking about. You know, that wasn't the. And that makes sense. So we always take it to extreme. So artificial, then, you know, will always be. It's very easy if it's, you know, the Jat Goswamis and the, all these like that. Then that's very easy. But it also just means artificial in our own dealings, right? But in this case, means anybody who's practicing, you know, in the line nicely, then we're willing to hear from them. It's when the attitude gets so disturbing, then we would avoid. Right? So, generally it means something outside. Right? So, you know, someone who's maybe a devotee, but it's not actually sampradayic. Right? Does that make sense? But at the same time, as technically a child born in the movement is not a sampradayic devotee. They're no different actually than a Jat Goswami. Because they're born in a family of devotees, and that's why they're Brahmins or Gurus. Right? So they're born in the family of devotees, so then we automatically think, oh, they're devotees. Right? If they act like devotees, they are. If they don't act like devotees, they're not. So when they make that commitment, then they're sampradayic. Now, because of their position, there's every chance that when they make that commitment, their platform of being committed and what they can do may be way greater than we could have done as a first generation. Right? Just because of the association. But so we have to be able to see is where, what is it meaning? It means who you wouldn't want to hear from. Does that make sense? So that's the... Does that make sense? Hearing from the text of the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the most important process of hearing. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of transcendental chanting of the holy name. And therefore, the chanting and hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendentally full of mellows. Because you get someone to chant japa, that's nice, or kirtan, that's nice. But until they're hearing the Bhagavatam, then you can't be sure that it's going to be steady. Right? Because that's the point in the Bhagavatam. By regular hearing the Bhagavatam, then all that's inauspicious in the heart is removed, and one comes to the point of steadiness. And then from that comes the taste. Right? You know what I'm saying? So in other words, having a means we're going out on Harinam, that's important, but also the book distribution that goes along with it is important. Right? So even if they're separate entities, right, they're two different groups, but still both processes are there. Right? Or we go to the yoga studio, get people to chant. That's good. They're chanting, they get purified. But unless they hear, you know, that's the thing is, we're so worried they won't want to hear. But they're hearing from all kinds of artificial devotees and non-devotees. You know, like that. So what will be, so then we're just one of the things that's there. You know, like in Australia, amongst the yoga groups, like that, if they're going to have a big festival, you know, all devotees are going to come from all over Australia to their festival, right? Their New Agey yoga festival. They always invite us because we do the best kirtan. But it's just one of the things. And then someone else will do the, you know, vegan food, and someone else will do the, you know, the music, and someone else will do the, you know, like that. So it's part of the things. They don't understand that it's such a major. But the difficulty is they're not hearing Bhagavatam. That's why they can't discriminate. So we should always consider in the preaching that some element of this Bhagavad philosophy has to be introduced. Like that. It doesn't mean that it has to be, you know, take them and bludgeon them over the head with it. But it's a matter of the Vaishnava philosophy is universal. It's the only thing that is universal. Everything else is not universal. You know, we're taking it that we're the cult and New Age is the broad thing. No, New Age is the cult. We're the universal element. Because we're the only thing that everybody can follow. You know? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's a... You know, it's only certain people can follow New Age. It's not universal. right? But anybody can chant. Anybody can hear Bhagavatam. Right? The transcendental holy name of the Lord can be heard and chanted according to the attraction of the devotee. One may chant the holy name of the Lord, or one may chant the holy name of Rama or Nrisimhadev. Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan, Brahma Samhita 539. The Lord has innumerable forms and names, and devotees may meditate upon a particular form and chant the holy name according to its attraction. The best course is to hear of the holy name, form, and so on from a pure devotee of the same standard as oneself. In other words, one who is attached to Krishna should chant and hear from other pure devotees who are also attached to Lord Krishna. The same principle applies for devotees attracted by Lord Ram, Lord Nrisimha, and other forms of the Lord. Because Krishna is the ultimate form of the Lord, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28. It is best to hear about Lord Krishna's name, form, and pastimes from a realized devotee who is particularly attracted by the form of Lord Krishna. So Bhagavatam is explaining about Krishna. All the forms of the Lord are there, but it's specifically dealing with Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? It means all are the personality of Godhead, but Krishna is the Supreme because he's the origin. So then our line is specifically for that. So everybody else can take part and get something. But if one's specifically interested in another deity as one's Ishtadev, then that line will bring that out for you, because that association, because in our association, we're always going to talk about Krishna and all that, and you'll be frustrated, you know. If you want to go to Nrisimha Loka, you'll have a problem, because we're always talking about Braj, you know. We worship Nrisimha Dev, but still we talk about Braj, so. Does that make sense? Like that. In Srimad Bhagavatam, great devotees like Sukadeva Goswami are specifically described, have specifically described Lord Krishna's holy name, form, and qualities. Unless one hears about the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord, one cannot clearly understand the other processes of devotional service. So here again is the chronology. You have to hear, then you can chant, and then you'll remember. But unless these three are done, the other processes aren't going to happen. Right? You're not going to, you know, take up service. You're not going to take up that element of friendship or worship the deity or self, or full surrender. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends one chant the holy name of Krishna. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. If one is fortunate enough to hear from the mouth of realized devotees, is very easily successful on the path of devotional service. Therefore, hearing of the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord is essential. Right? So here he's putting that in the association of devotees. So you don't have to put it in. Therefore, hearing of, in the association of devotees, you hear of the name, form, and qualities. Right? Because pastimes means the devotees. Right? So it's automatically going to be there. So for what Prabhupada is talking about, hearing about the pastimes of the Lord, the point is not the pastime and its uniqueness or deference, or it's, you know, this is a more high pastime, or the point is the relationship between the devotees and Krishna and how the devotees interact with Krishna. That's what's essential, because that's what we can gain. Does that make sense?
The Bhagavad Gita, the chapter 9, is the most confidential knowledge.
Yes.
Can you put the association vote, can you put that in the same terms? How it's one of the most confidential things to get the association of advanced devotees?
Means, yes, you could establish it's the most confidential, because the point is that, because when we're talking about devotees, we mean that's a generic element. So only in the association of devotees can you get this taste. Right? Well, when advanced. And then now he's saying specific, according to the attraction of the devotee. So according to that particular line, you know, of who you, that form of Krishna that you want to worship, then you want to associate with those devotees. right? And basically for the sadhaka, that's good enough. But as it goes on, as we were discussing in previous things, the point is a particular form of Krishna is manifest because of the devotee. Like when we see Braja Krishna, we're talking Braja Krishna and he does this and he does that, but it only happens because there Radharani is there. If there's no Radharani in that mood, there is no Krishna in that mood. It's that simple. You know what I'm saying? It's like Krishna, you know, two-armed form, Krishna and Braj, you know, walks in now. How are we going to relate to him? Oh, okay, God's here, so we should do this and that. So it's going to happen. Technically, he'll just turn into four-armed form. Because that's how we're dealing with it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It's like, we only do something because you're supposed to. Right? And so, when we're talking Vaidhi Sadhana, we talk about it as if it's a lower level. But the point is for a culture that abhors regulation, Vaidhi Sadhana is extremely elegant. You know? So that's why so many rules are written. Well, so many rules, but if those so many rules were there, we wouldn't do it. You know, you should feed Krishna regularly, nicely. We would go once a day. Oh, it's practical. So it's only because it's six times a day. We're doing it. That many articles. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it. You know, it's just like in the temple, we have to do it. But you go into home worship, devotees don't bathe the deities every day. They don't change their clothes. And they're asking, what's the minimum? Well, what's the minimum you'd like to wear your clothes for before changing? You know, what? You know, would you be comfortable changing your clothes and taking a bath once every ekadasi? No, but we're being practical. Practical is you have a picture. That's practical. But because of the other thing is because the Western society is based on just you feel like it. Therefore, we relate to the wrong part. Well, I feel like it, so that makes it devotional. I want deities, therefore it's devotional. Is it devotional? Devotional is that you can take care. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, why is it that, let's say you have your son when he's 30 years old, right? And you give him a gift, right? And, you know, you have money and all that. So it'll generally be something quite nice, something very valuable. Right? But now, look back when he was 12 or 13, you would never give him that kind of gift. Right? The watch you'll give him when he's 30, you know, married, has a couple of kids, is not the watch you'll give him when he's 13. Why? Right? Is he any less, somehow or another when he's 13, his family line is less distinguished? He's unable to take care of it. You know, therefore there's rules. You know, so that's the point, is you have a better quality of thing or a more elaborate, it requires more. So that's the point, is that Archamurti requires more. You don't want to do it, that's why God gave pictures. It's one of the eight kinds of deities. So that's the point, is that This insane combination of whatever I feel like I want to do and without respect for authority and no rules, it's so detrimental. So it's great for the spontaneous aspect, but how often is that spontaneous aspect? Right? Okay, Janmashtami, Prabhu's disappearance day. Govardhan Puja is lots of prasad. And you don't have to fast. Just for the record, there is no fasting on Govardhan Puja. If your temple is making you fast, it's managerial because they can't arrange breakfast. But there is no fasting on Govardhan Puja. It's, you know, the one festival where there's no fasting. Like that. Okay, Radhastami maybe. No, did we catch it for most temples around the world? So that you can't exactly call regulated devotional service if that's all you show up and show all that ecstasy. It's good. But that's why rules are there, to see that there's regular attendance. Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes is that the rules are there, but we don't like the rules. So Vaidhi is actually very elevated from our perspective. Just like we talk about shudras as if they, you know, like something off the bottom of your shoe. Oh man, I got a shudra on the bottom of my shoe again. You know, like that, you know. Your doormat needs to be a little bit more bristly. I can't get all, you know, get all the shudra off my foot. You know, it's like that, you know. They're in the cracks, you know. So every time I wear my mountain boots, they always get in the cracks, you know. So, you know what I'm saying? But the point is shudras are a human being. So compared to anyone, I'm talking to anyone from the Western environment, they're human. In the Western environment, there's not one who is. It just means that of humans, they're more emotionally distracted, more emotionally attached. That's why on a society that takes human life begins with the Tato Brahma Jigyasa and following Varnashram, that therefore someone who is attached to their duties within Varnashram, attached to the family interactions and the emotions, that gets in the way of self-realization. That's why it's considered lower. But the situation is not lower. You know what I'm saying? Because in the spiritual world, everybody's, you know, everyone's doing service, everyone's listening. It's not a problem there. It's just a problem here because it creates that overwhelming by emotions and always looking at the bad, what can go wrong. Rather than, means the dwijas are different because they look at what can go right. That's why they're leaders and that's why they're successful. And the shudra has a tendency to look at what can go wrong, so they need direction. So that's why we place it like this. Does this make sense? Right? But shudras and vaidhi, sadhana, bhakti, these are very elevated compared to where we're coming from. You know what I'm saying? You know, it may say the sidewalk is nothing special, like that. But compared to the gutter, it is. You know what I'm saying? Can I answer your question? Sidetracked by some.
We don't even fit into the writing category.
Not really.
We get some.
It's only because of Bhagavat we're able to take part in this process. Like that. That's all. Because very rare someone has the regulation and respect for authority that even those aspects would work in their life. You know what I'm saying? Like you have American puritanical, right? Because the Puritans were ones who went to America, and they were the prominent, how you say, religious force in that early America, right? Up to the independence, basically. Even after, for a while. But the Puritans is so, nothing is actually proper. Anything, engagement of the senses is wrong. Right? So then that gives rise to this, you know, extreme of, you know, it doesn't matter, we're just, you know, being ourselves, it's not the rules and that too. Anyone, you know, even being happy in anything social or eating a sense is wrong. It's not devotional. Right? Well, you don't have that problem with the Europeans. Right? You know, Asians even less than that, you know, in that particular respect. So, but, you know, it'll have a strength in other ways that they'll be very strict and immediate. Here's a rule, just follow it. You know? Because the rule is all important rather than the purpose of the rule. You know, so it's all or nothing. It's all extreme. Is that something? So that's why then the acharyas are pointing out so we can see in our life what's useful. So that element will be very useful in taking it up and doing it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, you know, taking that same example. And then that same group of people have this attitude, whatever they do, the rest of the world should be doing. Right? So if it's Krishna conscious, it's great. You know, as we stated before, practically every yatra in the world is started by an American. Like that. Or, you know, British that was made by American. Like that. Because whatever America, that the whole world should do it. So it's very advantage there. But it can get in the way that therefore one thinks just what one feels and one is one, what one can relate to doing, that is all devotional service is. So then when you get into fine points of regulation that aren't a rule, but it's actually a mentality that's not spontaneous, then there's a problem. Or if they get distracted from the direct devotional activities and therefore decide to, you know, create a philosophy to justify, you know, improper devotional situation, then they'll try to get everybody to follow that also. So then that becomes a weakness. Does that make sense? So the point is any mentality has an advantage and a disadvantage. The only one that doesn't is transcendental. The constitutionally situated soul, there is no problem. And they all have this, they think the same way. They have no problems. But as soon as you come into the material world, there's a problem. Right? The demons can't share anything with the demigods. The demigods with the demons. You know, Indra thinks he's, you know, the greatest thing since, you know, why do you call it, you know, I don't know, sliced bread or, you know, anything, you know, so. And therefore, he can't even appreciate those who are higher than them from the higher planets. You know, Bhrigu, and he insults them because he's so enthusiastic, because, you know, it's his group is what's important. So it's just the material mentality. So that he's willing to manage the universe, that's very good. But that he's such an enjoyer, he gets distracted, and therefore makes major, you know, cultural mistakes, that's his weakness. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, any situation has something strong about it, but it also has something weak. You know, that the Asian, you can cooperate, work together, the family mode, you know, social things work much easier, but at the same time as doing something big may not work. Because you're looking at yourself so much and working with just that little thing that you have that you can't look at it on a bigger level because you can't leave that. Right? But a lot of times the Western, they don't really have that micro unit and at working. So all they have is something bigger. Right? So their occupation takes the things and they do something big, but they can't do anything big in the personal, in the ashram side. Right? Well, third world, the ashram side, that's the easier side. You know, it's the occupation, that'll be the harder side. You know, so each one has its strength and weakness. So that's why in international society, where someone has a strength, you take advantage of that. Right? And then you're able to supplement where your weakness is. That makes sense? Yes.
Is it because of that phenomenon that cooperation move between the yatras and temple hasn't as yet developed?
Much of the time. That means it basically boils down, ultimately it's neophyte. And then you can say within neophyte it's because, you know, the Germans think it should be done this way and the French think it should be done this way and the Italians, of course, this, you know, those guys don't know what they're doing. You just relax, you know. You know, so it's always this, it's all those kind of different things, you know. And then after everybody said everything, then the American has, you know, this is actually what we're going to do, you know. And that's what happens. So, you know, say all you want. That's what happens, you know. So the point is that it comes up because of being neophyte. Because if one comes to the Madhyam platform, these things don't get in the way. Then the positive side of the you know conditioned qualities are then able to be used. The neophyte means he's overwhelmed by the negative. Therefore, anartha nivriti, right? His bhajana kriya is anishta, right? So if the devotees are able to sit down, cooperate, discuss things, and then come to, you know, a proper platform, that indicates the madhyama element, right? Because the anarthas aren't overwhelming them. So you can see, you know, the advantage. Okay, culture, I wouldn't look at it that way, but now that they present it that way in relationship to Krishna consciousness, then I can relate to that. But if it's presented not in relation to Krishna consciousness, then it'll stay. Because the Madhyama, you know, why should I take up that over this? You know? You know what I'm saying? You know, why should we accept, you know, American bureaucracy over European bureaucracy? You know, come on, we've had it longer, you know, so it's like, you know, ours are more, you know, dignified, you know, so it's like, you know, why should we, but if you show a connection to Krishna, this works better. Then it's like, okay, that can be related to it. But for the neophyte, they're not going to, over that, and if they do accept, generally it's on the external.
Prabhupada does mention the lame and the blind.
The lame and the blind, yes, because what we're saying, but we're, remember what the blind is. When blind is blind, it means they're strong. They're going to get out there and whatever they do, but they can't see. So that's why the Vedic culture and the Shastra has to be the basis of vision for the blind man. But when the blind man says, you know, blindness is standard, and everybody in the world should be blind, we're not going to follow this Vedic culture, we're not going to follow the Shastras, that's fanatical, we're going to be practical. Then you have blind men falling in a ditch, very enthusiastically running around, falling in ditches. Lame man's not in a ditch. He's not getting anywhere, but he's not in a ditch. You know what I'm saying? So that's where lame man, blind man, he's lame, it doesn't have that drive. Like we see, Bhaktisiddhanta said, all the elements are there, but there's no drive. So when he comes, he gives that drive, and immediately they take it. Right? Like that. So that's the point, is that that drive is there. So you see in India, you only have the rare personality has that drive. Right? But the Westerner, most have that drive. Right? You see that when you go from Asia into the West, you know, and unfortunately you are going to have to draw the line between the East Bloc and the farther West, is that everyone has this drive, maybe applied nicely or not, but they have this drive. Now if you can make that Krishna conscious, it'll expand everything very nicely. But at the same time as the other ones have that culture, and like now we're talking about communities and all that, but the blind man is trying to tell the lame man how to live in a community, you know, how to see things. But if you want community, then they should be talking to the third world. Third world knows community. You know what I'm saying? You go into, you know, a city somewhere in the West, and there's a little group of people there. They're not white. Right? You know, there's some kind of Latin, or Oriental, or Indian, or, you know, some other ethnic group. They have a community. You may like it or not, but there is a community. They support each other. It doesn't matter what happens, they're going to take care of each other. They don't even know you, but you're part of the community. They'll take care of you. But the Western, the blind men, they don't know this at all. So therefore, if we're talking community, we'd be looking at, well, how do they do it there? Does that make sense? So that's the important thing. But as dynamic preaching and all that, you know, going out and like that, the West is the one, they're willing to make the big programs and do all these different things. The others, it's, they're absorbed in the community element that their whole life is already absorbed. They're taking care of the family nicely that, and considerate of it, that they don't have any extra energy for these, but these other ones, they don't take care of the family, so they got plenty of that energy left over. Yeah? You know, it's like that. It works. So if you combine the two, then the blind man can learn from the lame man. The lame man can get that advantage of, you know, dynamism of what they know, what they see by the blind man. So it's a very good combination, Prabhupada's meant, but you have to know what to combine. You know, but if we combine, you know, the lameness of the one side and the blindness of the other, then you will have a blind man in the ditch. You know, and he won't be able to get out because he's lame. Right? But there'll be a distinction. he crawled into the ditch, while the other blind man, he walked in confidently, like that. So, you know what I'm saying? So even there, there'll be a social distinction. So, therefore, hearing of the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord is essential.
Moving on. Moving on.
In conclusion. Okay. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.11, there is this verse. Verses describing the name, form, and qualities of Anantadev, the unlimited Supreme Lord, are able to vanquish all the sinful reactions of the entire world. Therefore, even if such verses are improperly composed, devotees hear them, describe them, and accept them as bona fide and authorized. Right? In other words, someone's discussing about Krishna. Even if it's not well put together, the language isn't good, the presentation's not great, but it's about Krishna. Therefore, then devotees hear them. Right? That's the point. That's why any devotee who's, you could say, rightly situated, means within the society, accepted the tenets of the society, and you know their purpose is pure devotional, so they can speak on Bhagavatam. Right? They can go out and preach. They can change lives because it's a value. Potency is there. Like that. So this is the point. Well, if you were talking about poetics and grammar and logic and rhetoric, then only someone very educated would be able to do well. Then the devotional line, even someone's not a good speaker or this or that, still what they'll say will be of value. In this connection, Sridhar Swami has remarked that a pure devotee takes advantage of another pure devotee by trying to hear from him about the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord. If there's no such opportunity, he alone chants and hears the holy Lord's holy name. Yes.
I can count that quote that devotees can be grouped one sees.
I was trying to figure out. Ivan counted. And I was wondering, so what is this Ivan doing? He's counting what? Or Ivan counted two groups of devotees, right?
Okay. Ivan counted two
groups. Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
That some devotees see the same Supreme Personality of Godhead is in his many forms, and others simply concentrate on one particular form. Is this statement has some substance, and if yes, can you explain it?
Why would you get the idea that such a thing exists?
Which one?
Both of them.
I was thinking maybe it's somehow relating to the rasa of the devotee. How he
No, that's has nothing to do with it. You know what I'm saying? One has a taste to relate to Krishna in a particular form. Therefore, pastimes just means those particular devotees. That's what it means there. But it doesn't mean that the other ones, it's Krishna. And so, you know, there's that. It's not a problem, right? In Radha Kund, so as Upadeshamrita has pointed out, that Radha Kund is the highest state of existence, right? So in Radha Kund, around Radha Kund, the eight Shakis, they each have their kunjas, so that you have general pastimes in the kund, but then after you go into the various kunjas. And in the kunjas, you know, you can have different kinds of pastimes, like that. So in Lalita's kunj, then all the pictures around the kunj, they're all of Krishna killing the demons. Right? So now, according to your mundane concept of rasikness, that just wouldn't fly. Right? But it does. Right? And when Krishna is dealing in an arrogant way with the gopis, you know, in a overly youthful, playful, arrogant way, then they complain that he doesn't know how to deal with women. And they give an example is that he cut off Suparnika's nose. So that means they know the pastimes of Ramachandra, they know all the different things. So they don't have a problem. The residents of Braja don't have a problem hearing, the stories of the Pandavas or, anything else. They don't have any problem. Because for them, it's all rasa. You may have your particular thing that you like best. It's just like, let's say someone is a connoisseur of food, good food, right? So anything that's cooked well, they'll appreciate. But does that not mean that they don't have their favorite preparations? But it doesn't mean that everything else is not appreciated, because it's also taste, it's also rasa. But they have their specific taste. Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes is that because of mundane concepts, then we'll say, oh, it doesn't like matter. And then those, it's only this. No, but the point is we're worshippers of Krishna and Vrindavan, but at the same time is that we're happy to hear the pastimes of Nrisimhadev or any of the other avatars. It doesn't mean that we worship them. Like we hear about the Das Avatar and the things like that, but do we have any deities? We only have deities of Nrisimhadev. Does that make sense? He's the only one that we worship, right? That the prayer we use, Tavakata Kamala, that's one verse out of 10 verses in the Gita Govinda. Right? So, why only that one? Okay? Because he's in Vrindavan. He's Nanda Baba's deity. He protects the devotees. Does that make sense? So if you're gonna come here to the material world, you're gonna want to bring somebody along with you who can take care, right? Because Braj may have its dangers, but that's occasionally a demon walks in. But here it's like at every step there's some problem, So it's is that okay? Yeah.
Would there be any value for the purpose of attracting people, establishing a theme park for the avatar?
You can. It means it's just to show all the different pastimes, but then the point is Krishna has pointed out. It's not that we do that and then avoid Krishna. The point is we're always going to talk about Krishna. So devotees may try to avoid that, just trying to look more balanced. And it's not natural. A mother talks about her kid, and other moms don't complain. Because they'll talk about theirs. So when they talk about theirs, okay, great. What I'm saying? So we wouldn't have a problem sitting down with, let's say, like a Sri Vaishnava and discussing about the Lord. We'd talk about Krishna and they'd talk about, some other deity. But the point is it's all about Krishna. Kirtanam. Right? In other words, we hear from those who their intent is pure devotional service. Right? That's who we should hear from. Yes.
To connect this with the previous chapter, the specific practice of hearing Lord's form, qualities and pastimes.
What happened to the name?
Specifically
left it out.
Because those are the higher level realizations. So those.
So why form, qualities, pastimes? Why not just pastimes? That there is no form or qualities, right? How would you have pastimes without any forms or qualities, right? Could you have it?
Abstract concept.
Hmm?
An abstract concept.
Yes. Good for sitting around in little cafes and, drinking your, espresso or, your latte or something like that. Espresso might be a little too rough, like that. So, right? So, but the point is name. So, when you're in this pastime, how do you refer to the person next to you? It's just by telepathy. You know. And they know. You looked. And they looked. You knew that they knew that you knew. Right? isn't it?
I meant to explain.
But the point is that, yes, but you couldn't because you weren't using the name, right? So the point is name is where it starts.
This is clear.
So in the spiritual world, they don't chant Krishna's name. Okay, so that means now, Radharani, you'd have to admit she's advanced, right? Okay? Does she chant the holy name? Okay. So then why would you separate it? Right? There's a chronology, but it doesn't mean that the last one doesn't include the other one. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, when you say name, form, quality, and pastimes, that's said for us. Because we have to go through that chronology. We'll look at it as higher and lower. But for those who are already perfect, then discussing the name, the form, the qualities of the pastimes, so them are non-different. Right? Because here, let us do like this. Even if we want to make it into a chronology, the one's higher than the other. Okay? Going with what you had said there. Now, Rupa Goswami's definition of the taste for the name is that when you chant the name, then you wish you had millions of tongues. And when it enters the ears, you wish you had millions of ears. So that's where we start from, of, you know, chanting on this advanced level. Okay? So then if now you want to put qualities, form qualities and pastimes beyond that, then we can discuss. Right? But we talk about it as name, yeah, the new bhaktas got that, but you know, we're more advanced, so we have the form or qualities or pastimes. No, there's no difference. Since Krishna and his name are non-different, means the name and the form, the name and the qualities, the name and the pastimes are non-different. According to our realization, we'll only see those. And generally, we're wrestling with just hearing the name. You know, generally it's chanting and wondering, you know, today it's what's happening and like that. Is that okay? So in other words, these elements are artificial, where we separate like this, or, you know, we're showing the chronology of the rasas, but that it's artificial, therefore the conjugal is higher, the others don't matter. No, the point is this, if the conjugal is the adi rasa, it's the first rasa. So if it's the first, why would the others be manifest? If it's the first and it's the best and it's the topmost, why would you manifest the others? Right? Right? Has Rolls-Royce ever produced a Ford? Right? Or, you know, some other? No, they'll always produce Rolls-Royce. Does that make sense? No slight to Ambarish Prabhu here. Okay. Does that make sense? So the point is that why would you manifest the lower if it's the original rasa and it's the highest rasa? Well, for what reason? Right? You can't have be boredom, because then that means there's some lacking in the rasa. The rasa is complete in itself. So why?
More complete than
More complete. What becomes more complete?
Greater variety. I can show it more.
Show what?
This rasa.
This means what is this rasa?
The adi rasa.
The adi rasa. Okay. Then yes. Because the point is that if you're showing the conjugal rasa, what's the meaning if there isn't other conjugal rasas? If it's the only one, then, of course, it's quite unique, but then there's also that element of doing what others do. It adds something to it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so therefore you have other families, and because there's that, because you happen to be there, then that means there's children. Right? So parental rasa has to come in there. right? You are going to associate with those other people. Therefore, you're going to have friends. There's going to be, you're going to have servants. Right? So just naturally is there. Then in that environment, then the Yadi Rasa can be fully tasted. Does that make sense? So the point is these levels aren't a problem. It only becomes a problem for the someone who doesn't understand the devotional process. You know, specifically the neophyte will have this kind of misunderstanding. Does that make sense? You know, because they have to create. If you either follow religion or you'll create your own. It's that simple. So if we don't like the Vedic in that, we have to make our own. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. Kirtana. Is that okay? Kirtana. The hearing of the holy name has been described above. Now let us try to understand the chanting of the holy name, which is the second item in the consecutive order. It is recommended that such chanting be performed very loudly, especially here. If you don't, not loud, you can't hear anything, right? In Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni says that without shame, he began traveling all over the world, chanting the holy name of the Lord. Similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has advised, Srinadapi sunichena, tororapi sahishnuna, amani namana dena, kirtaniya sadahari. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, 17:31. The loud chanting.
Yeah.
Yes?
Is there ever a point where it's gross?
Is there a point where it's gross?
Sometimes you go somewhere and the speakers are so loud and
it's... Yeah, well, I'm saying it's not necessary. The point of the speakers is so that you can hear, but if it's beyond the range of hearing, then it's not important. You know, I mean, unless their idea is that in Navadvip they can hear the glass or something. But unless it's in Navadvip they want them to hear the class, then maybe it's okay.
Can it be offensive?
It's not so much offensive, it's just inappropriate. Right? The point is that, you know, I mean, what is the speaker is so that you can hear, that's all. But if it's greater than what you need to hear, it's not important. It's just like if I'm, you know, sitting next to you and shouting, then one would say, what's wrong with you? So it's the same thing with the speakers. It's how much it takes to be able to hear. More than that, then is not essential. You know, I mean, though it's popular. You know, how you say? Yeah. A devotee can very peacefully chant the holy name of the Lord by behaving more humbly than the grass, being tolerant like a tree and offering respects to everyone without expecting honor from everyone else. Right? So what he's getting into is he's talking about the proper thing. Chanting means you're always chanting. So to do that, you have to have these qualities. Right? Because that's the point. Kirtaniya Sadahari. Then you can always chant. So what he means chanting means it's regular. Did I read the without expecting honor from anyone else? Okay. Such qualifications make it easier to chant the holy name of the Lord. Right? Otherwise, it's harder to chant because one will be distracted. Because one's pride, one's lack of tolerance, one's need for respect, one's irrespect towards others will get in the way of one's chanting. Right? Offenses will be made, distractions, attachments will be there. It means all the anarthas will manifest because of it. The process of transcendental chanting can be easily performed by anyone, even if one is physically unfit, classified lower than others, devoid of material qualifications, or not at all elevated in terms of pious activities. The chanting of the holy name is beneficial. Right? So the chanting can go on. Occupational duties, other material skills may be dependent upon those things. Right? But the chanting of the holy name is not. an aristocratic birth, an advanced education, beautiful bodily features, wealth, and similar results of pious activities are all unnecessary for advancement in spiritual life. One can very easily advance simply by chanting the holy name. It is understood from the authoritative source of Vedic literature that especially in this age, Kali Yuga, people are generally short-lived, extremely bad in their habits, inclined to accept methods of devotional service that are not bona fide. Moreover, they are always disturbed by material conditions, and they are mostly unfortunate. Under the circumstances, the performance of other processes such as yajna, dana, tapa, kriya, sacrifice, charity, and so on are not at all possible. Therefore, it is recommended, Harirnama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nascheva, 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 Gatiranita. In this age of corn hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting of the holy name of the Lord. There's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way. So any of these other processes, yajna, dan, tapa, kriya, sacrifice, all these things, it's in relationship to the holy name. It's giving us a support. So that which the acharyas have given, then that's followed. That's which they're not given, then it's not necessary. Right? Like in 11th, probably there's yajna for initiation. 11th canto then talks about a yajna in connection with the deity worship. Right? It means the pancharatrik nitya homa. Like that. So these are our standard stuff, but let's say doing some other yajnas, you know, that's not so important. Right? Those, because, you know, to be able to have the qualification and everything, but in these ones, the holy name is the prominent element, the Lord, the worship of the Lord, so therefore it can be performed.
What means kriya?
Kriya. You may be meaning kriya here could mean kriya meaning your different yoga elements, your asanas, your breathing exercises. It can mean that. It can also just mean various technical elements that you rules that you apply in your life, that you're following some kriyas, nitya kriyas, like that. Naimitya kriyas means that it's rituals. So it can either mean rituals or yoga practices. You know, something very regulated and very definite, right? Because the yoga, you have to do it exactly in that way. You have to sit in this way. You can't strain. You have to be using these muscles, relaxing everything else. You have to be breathing in or breathing out at a particular time. You have to be focusing on a particular place. The mind has to, all that, and then you get some benefit from the asana. If you don't, then it doesn't really work. Simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one advances perfectly in spiritual life. This is the best process for success in life. In other ages, the chanting the holy name is equally powerful, but especially in this age, Kali Yuga is the most powerful. In the other age, the holy name was powerful, but it was done along with these others. There was a form. In this age, the forms basically are very difficult. Therefore, it's the most powerful. The others can be used as supportive, but they're not in themselves dynamic ways to advance. Kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sangat param vrajet. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.351. Simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, one is liberated and returns home back to Godhead. Right? So you get both. Liberation means it removed all material attachments, and one went back to Godhead, it developed that desire to please Krishna. Right? So it does both, because in other ages, all these yajna, tapa, that was removing, right? Well, the name was attracting to the Lord. But it is so perfect that itself, it does both aspects of sadhana bhakti. Yes.
So why
let's say you have a very, very rich person. Is there a problem that he uses his money to do something for Krishna? Or he should, you know, his money just sits in the bank and he just chants?
We hear that.
Yes. Because they could meditate. Because their focus is so great, they will meditate on something. But from the holy name, then what do you get? From the name, then you get form. Right? So they're able to function on form. So they're chanting the holy name and meditating on form. That's what the yoga meditation they're doing. Yes. Means meditation only means Vishnu. Because that's not what they're interested in. To be on that level means you have to be really materially pious. So generally someone who's very pious is distracted by that. You know what I'm saying? Like you're saying, even within you know, having facility, one has a lot of money. Right? But of all the ones that I've met that have a lot of money, Ambarisha is the only one I've met that absolutely has no ego. Nothing. Right? Others, then it's very controlled or not controlled. So there's others that are just behind that. But he's, so it's just, naturally, there's something else that's there. And so you use your money, you do this and that. So they, by piety, they have that. So therefore, they like using their meditation. Because you can just chant. Narad Muni does it. You know? Like that. So it is there, but these others, they have other purposes. You know? Like the yajna, they have other purposes. The deity worship. Then, you know, this there, that's getting closer. You could say, but it's not a saying that because they're born in Kali Yuga they would be destined for Goloka. I would say is that the opportunity is there because they don't have any other distraction. So therefore, meaning in the way of some kind of spiritual upliftment. You know, generally Kali Yuga means that they're not interested in anything like that. So they would be more open to it. You could say other ages, their piety sometimes gets in the way. Just like even now, you bump into a very pious Hindu. Sometimes it gets in the way of their being able to take up Krishna consciousness dynamically. So therefore, they have the opportunity is very open because they don't have any other alternative. Right? If you have no food, you come along with any food, you'll take it. You know. But if you have your own food, I come along with something that may be better, but you like your food. Does that make sense? Like that. So I would say is that everybody's getting whatever they want. And so that's why it's there. So it's arranged. But I wouldn't take that line of thought and go, everybody here is... No. It's just, I wouldn't take that and go beyond that point. Is that
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaura Prema ki.